Now on Radio 4, Helen Lederer presents Darling, It's Crystals for Christmas, in which she hears from the people who spend every working day of their lives designing Christmas. We join Helen, who's in a flap sorting out her own decorations, with her sister Janet and her daughter Hannah.
What's that, Hannah?
Stars made out of straw or hay.
Hey, wickerwork.
Yeah, that's the one.
Rural stars that have been made, what, probably from, well, horses' food, do you think?
But is wickerwork in this year?
Oh. What do you think, Hannah? Shall we go wickerwork? Go
wickerwork? I just think they look nice.
What do we think about these bird cages? I remember loving
that
this.
That looks ridiculous.
When I go to other people's houses or I look at other people's trees, I have to be careful, and my tongue often gets many holes in whilst I keep quiet and smile sweetly. I think trees are all to do with the personality of the person that dresses them.
Well, if Christmas tree dressing tells that designer about people's personalities, what does my collection of slightly bent bird cages from my mum and wickerwork stars which were free off the front of a magazine say about mine? That I can't let go of the past and deeply unfashionable that have been arrested at the red tinsel phase. How do those people in the glossy magazine decide what's in each year? And as we perform the annual ritual of climbing into the loft, banging our head on the ceiling in our efforts to fish out our decorations, thank goodness it is only an annual event. For some people, like Julie Hassan, she thinks about Christmas every day of her working life.
It's sort of living theatre in a way, Christmas. And I did drama at the university, and it's that whole sort of theatrical thing. It was almost like a sort of big drama, and I thought, how fantastic. It's to actually be part of it and to buy for it, and then you can see your finished product sometimes in people's houses. It gives you a real buzz, I think, definitely.
Julie Hassan has been buying Christmas for Liberties for 13 years. It's her job to globetrot, sourcing baubles and bells and whatever else takes her fancy to ensure that their store makes the maximum impact at Christmas time. Her team already decided what their themes were going to be for this year in October 2002.
We tend to have four themes. It's always a big team voice. I think that's why it works well. Everyone buys into it.
But what would be the influence behind it, given that you change it every year? Would it be film, TV programmes?
It can be a number of things. It may well be that. It may well be colours. I think because we've a very strong sort of textile house with our own fabrics, it really is colour. It's colour-led, I think, for us. And really just a feel in the marketplace that we think this is going to be hot. It might well be that it's going to be a really soft, feminine sort of Christmas, or it might be a magical Christmas. So we have a feeling that these are the sort of themes that are bubbling under.
But are there taboo colours? Like, I'm thinking royal blue or turquoise.
For us, blues are always slow, to be honest. The blues are really sort of slow colour. And black sort of comes and goes. Some people have black, some people don't have black. Black works nice with a sort of like a pink, but I'd say blues and blacks are the only ones that are really bit hit and miss.
What went on in your meeting, if you can't disclose all the top secrets, obviously, that enabled you to arrive at this year's theme?
The main theme that we all felt was important was a winter frost, a very much a sort of winter wonderland, lots of crystals and feathers and pom-poms and pearls and icicles and sort of Arctic animals like polar bears and sort of Arctic owls and things like that. So that was a really strong theme. We always felt that sort of frost theme was going to be really important. So that's our big sort of store theme is that sort of winter frost. And then we have a fabulous sort of like Audrey Hepburn one, which is very soft, feminine, very pink, lots of feathers. Lots of crystals and, you know, something quite spectacular.
It is very hard year after year to come up with something that is completely new and fresh. Christmas is Christmas, after all, and people expect balls, stars, bells.
Jonathan Berlin's company, Universal Designs, is one of the major players in the decoration market. They design and manufacture for high street stores and produce some of the more contemporary products in the Christmas canvas. Sadly for me, not a wickerwork star in sight.
We are very fashionable with our products. We work with different materials which are not necessarily synonymous with Christmas decorations. We work with shapes, which may be traditional, but we stretch and change them to, I suppose, to mutate them into something a little bit more hip and happening. And this range here, which is a range of leather and metal trim, the two examples I have here are in tan, and that's a Christmas tree shape, and we have an angel in purple leather here. Really came off the back of a furniture range we were designing, which was wood and leather. And it seemed like such a great idea at the time. Well, we're using these materials, they haven't been done, and it was really for the high-end customer. And they've been very successful.
I would like to think that if you cut out the pages from magazines from Christmas's past with no sort of other means of identification on them and lay them out on the table, I could date them for you. Because, you know, there was the year of the tartan. I always think of tartan as actually quite late 80s. There was the crystal year, which was about 96, which is when I went in the opposite direction and did sort of Byzantine colours. There are definite themes which are promoted mostly by the glosses, the colour magazines, each year. And whether we do it consciously or not, we buy into them.
Writer and broadcaster Alison Cork is Mrs. Noel. Last year, she presented a 15-part TV series, Counting Down to Christmas, which was full of food and decoration ideas. She's also written books and presented videos on how to achieve the perfect Christmas.
I can honestly say I never, ever get sick of Christmas, and it surprises me. I always expect around sort of July I'll have this sinking feeling, and I never do. And July is when I get the press releases from all the companies who are having their Christmas open days. So when everybody else is in their bikini on the beach, I'm actually in a darkened room waving bits of tinsel around, and it gets me every time. I think there's something about Christmas, it's that sort of primeval feeling of excitement and anticipation. It might be something to do with my sort of German Christmas upbringing, but it never fails to move me, and I just have this childlike excitement about it, which doesn't go away.
What are your favourite things from your archives? We're surrounded by some absolutely stunning, glittery, bejewelled, a feast of things you've made.
Perhaps my most favourite are these little miniature Casbah slippers, and this was from the year when I decided to go colourful and sort of slightly Byzantine. And these are slippers about 3.5 inches long. They're made of felt. They've got that sort of curly turned up toe that you would associate with Arabian Nights. And I've just taken lots and lots of glass beads in golds and crystal and ruby red and just studded these slippers with gold braid and colourful gemstones. And they take quite a long time to make. I mean, each slipper, depending upon how you decorate it, probably takes up to an hour, and I've probably made 20 of them in my life. But A, they're therapeutic to make. B, they're absolutely beautiful. And I'd go so far as to say that they almost become a sort of mini Christmas heirloom, in that you'd wrap these up in tissue paper and you'd keep them for years.
People normally wouldn't think a tree, oh, let's hang it with shoes. Where did you decide to put shoes on a tree?
One year I was trying to think of a new theme, and I didn't want it to be that sort of cool crystal look, because that was fashionable at the time, and I just wanted to go in the opposite direction. And I suddenly thought, well, I want to go really colourful. And I thought, where are all the cultures in the world that are colourful? And immediately I thought to the Middle East. And I know it's not directly Christmas related, in fact, quite the opposite. I just thought, well, you know, people see Christmas, yes, some people see it religiously, other people see it decoratively. And I just thought this was a beautiful theme to follow. And I have to say that when I made these slippers on my show, they were the most requested item ever. I think upwards of 35,000 people wrote in and wanted the instructions for making these Casbah slippers.
I'm here at the NEC in Birmingham for a pre-Christmas trade fair, which is a must visit for every high street buyer and independent retailer in the country. It's a 3-day eventer and is so vast that I've probably walked 3 miles looking at everything that is twinkly, shiny and bright. There are Father Christmases in every shade imaginable. Who, I wonder, will be brave enough to plump for the pumpkin-coloured one? And I'm surrounded by enough baubles to decorate an entire forest. For wholesalers like Mike Chapman, they're hoping that their range this year will entice the checkbooks of the buyers.
Anything traditional. It just doesn't sell anymore. It's got to be fashion. And you've got to do a range that goes right through the house.
Now, when you say through the house, you mean it's actually got to go with the walls, the colour of your sitting room?
Well, we do things that hang down the walls. We do traditional foils that go across the ceilings. For instance, at my home, the wall lights, we have bows, etc. on there, fitting in with our Christmas tree. And the door handles, they're displayed as well with the same sort of thing.
This year, what would you say are people going to be queuing up for?
Silver pink, silver mauve, silver blue.
And do you think that people are prepared to take the risk of mixing colours, or are they still like very streamlined, like it's got to be one, you know, I would just have gold.
You would be quite old-fashioned having gold only, but every walk of life now is fashion, so why not use Christmas?
Majority of it's actually design-led glassware. We sell from people from the small independents straight away up to people like Liberties and Selfridges.
David Corley's stall is a tasteful display of crystal, metal and glass figurines.
It's a product, basically, it doesn't actually have perceived value. It's just got an R factor and it just sells through very, very quickly.
What's an R factor?
You ladies should know. Oh, isn't that nice?
Oh,
that sort of thing.
An R factor?
Yeah. If it's got an R, then it's a good product. It can sell through quick.
What gives this an R factor? You've got like a silver angel sitting on a kind of droplet.
Well, these are actually designed by us, and they're actually manufactured by a company from Birmingham, an old pewter manufacturer. And we've actually come across with these fairies and angels on droplets.
What is a droplet?
These droplets here, we've actually sort of used them as if they're a raindrop. They've got an iridescence on them, so it looks like shit. There you
are. It works.
It works.
Now, you say they've got no perceived value, which sounds very philosophical. What do you mean?
The product doesn't cost a lot, but it looks more expensive than what it really is.
Oh.
So it's an affordable product for everybody, and it can be sold throughout every store in every city.
Could some posher shops charge more for that lovely little glass angel with a tiny gold halo than others then?
Majority of shops probably put 2.35, which is double plus VAT, so that's your markup. Everyone's got to get a living and pay the tax man, unfortunately.
How much do you sell your favourite lovely little tiny dotty angel there for?
We sell them for 98 pence, and the retailer can do them to the trade, £2.50. Down in London, there's a place called Highgate, and basically I walked into one of our clients there, and they had a small decoration of ours, which cost them £1.50, and it was actually up at
£8.99. And maybe if it was too cheap, some shoppers wouldn't actually want to buy it.
There's a lot of products like that on the street. Sometimes if you put the price up, then it'll sell.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have to say, David, I've noticed some pink creeping in, and I've heard a rumour that pink and mauve are also sort of part of this tapestry of glass and gold. What do you feel about those pink lights? I think they're lovely, but...
Pink lights are electric. They're really, really good. Those have been a bestseller for 2 years now.
I'm beginning to feel more and more unfashionable by the minute, and not a little alarmed at the sorry state of my tree accessories.
I think that the powers that be have encouraged people who perhaps wouldn't normally celebrate Christmas or thought it was vaguely naff to do so, to look at it on a more lifestyle basis. So, you know, you've got maybe younger people who are setting up home, they've got their fantastically minimalist interior because that's been the theme of the last few years. And, the commercial brains have thought, well, we've got to cash in on this, so let's make people think it's actually cool to celebrate Christmas in a minimalist fashion. So then you suddenly saw, you know, being spawned this nation of Christmas trees made of curly wire. You know, green was out, metal was in. People are being trained to buy Christmas, whatever their personal tastes are.
So, Alison, how many different ways are there with a bauble, actually?
I think the honest answer is there are a limited number of things you can do with a bauble, but in the interest of commercial gain, there'll always be somebody who's willing to wrap it in leather or wire or whatever material they think is in to convince, you know, the young urban man about town that he needs some leather baubles hanging on his tree.
Our cheeks are nice and rosy, and comfy cozy are we. We're snuggled up together like birds of a feather would be.
I would say that the 20-somethings who've just moved into their flat and they try and paint every wall a different colour and be funky, and they may work in an industry where there's fashion involved, will go for those more wacky, way out things. And I think if you scan magazines about people's lifestyle, very often you'll see that type of person actually makes their own Christmas decorations because they're not out there for them. As a commercial entity, myself and others have to an extent, play it safe-ish. I think the most innovative thing we've probably done was while working with House of Fraser, we developed with them cone trees made out of PVC, but in an array of sizes and colours, from bright orange to arctic white to black, turquoise. Each item was decorated. We supplied in excess of 2.5 million decorations on these trees as well. So it was a big job.
I want to have a really superb designer tree, but every time I go to decorate it, my children, who have left home now, come, and it's all part of, you know, Christmas, they have to help decorate it, and they won't let me not put the things that they remember from their childhood. So I have got the most eclectic selection of little mice with, you know, bright red felt coats on.
That's the other thing that trees have, the chocolate decoration.
What lengths, Alison, do you think designers are prepared to go to? Or is it sort of legitimate to make at least sort of 6 trips abroad to come up with the ultimate Christmas original design for one particular year?
Last year I actually did make a 3-day trip to St. Petersburg because I wanted inspiration for a book that I was writing about Christmas, and I just suddenly felt that there was a huge untapped array of decorative images there, you know, in the Hermitage and other places, and also just architecturally, that would inspire me. And there's nothing like standing in front of the real thing to be inspired, so I trotted off to St. Petersburg, and I tell you the thing that really did it for me, it was the church, rather ghastly named, the Church of Spilt Blood, which is that candy floss looking church in St. Petersburg, which has all the swirly towers and the enamel and the gold decoration. And that translated into a cake that was a replica of the Church of Spilt Blood, and I used edible gold leaf and wonderful, gorgeous, jewel-like cake colours to colour the icing. And we had everything. We had the cupolas and we had the golden baubles on the towers, and it's utterly fantastic.
You didn't call it the Cake of Spilled Blood. Please tell me you didn't.
No, I didn't call it the Cake of Spilled Blood. It was just a Christmas fantasy cake.
Whilst the designers hope they've got their range right for the big players in the high street, another important customer is the independent retailer. Women like Sheila and Amanda, who have 2 shops in Buckinghamshire and Hertfordshire. Will they be seduced by the bright pink angel lights on display at the NEC?
We're looking for Christmas 2004. In fact, we did our Christmas shopping early this year for Christmas 2003.
Is it quite competitive when you're sourcing your material to get the right things for your shoppers so that you have something different from a shop very close to you who's in a similar market?
Yes. We make certain that we are not selling the same. We hope we're not selling the same as the person down the road, and vice versa. They don't want to be selling what we are selling. But, I mean, on the whole, we are very careful. And when we go round the stands, we always check the postal codes and the areas, always.
Did you buy up, when you did your major purchasing, what you liked or what you considered your shoppers, your market, to like?
A bit of both, actually. We try and stick with traditional goodies, and we might bring in a little bit of colour for other items, but on the whole we stick to traditional. And yes, we do know our customers now.
I mean, might you go mauve, for instance?
Probably not.
No, we won't go mauve. We will stick to silver, gold and red. Green to a lesser extent, but they are the traditional colours, and ultimately that's what people buy most of. We've seen items we would love to have in our shop that we feel would sell much better in London, because people pay more in London, they're more design-led. And we're out in the provinces, and so it takes a while for people to get used to, say, turquoise glass or red glass or whatever, decorating their homes. So we have a reticence on those sort of very extreme colours. This year, coming through from Europe, are a lot of glass beads, some lovely, lovely wreaths with glass beading of beautiful colours.
sort of rising up from a twig base. It may not sound very, very lovely, but it is very unusual to look at. It has a frosted sort of feel that glistens and has texture, and that's coming through from Europe.
Well, they are fabulous. There was a stand just at the back where we have ordered some stationery product for, and they did little nipple warmers. Fur nipple warmers. We have actually decided not to do it this year, but maybe we might go back for stocking fillers.
If it's Christmas and it's chilly, it might go down rather well.
We would have to wear them in the shop. I'm not sure our customers would appreciate that.
Clean them on top.
If you're a small independent, it's very difficult to have your shop filled with one colour. But if you're going to a large, multiple, place like Selfridges or something like that, then obviously you're going to take on a big theme. For me, it's a mixture of colours, and people just change it every year. I might have a mass of red wooden toys, which they can complement stuff they bought previously. It's all very well having a massive swathe of colour in your shop, but if it doesn't sell, or you only hit 30% of your customers, then you're not turning over the same amount of money you would be if you were hitting 70% of your customers, so you've got to be a bit more unspecific.
For Alistair Love, who has one shop in Chesham, Christmas represents one third of his annual turnover. He spends 3 days at the fair traipsing up and down the aisles to make sure he has the perfect selection for all his customers.
It's mainly quite glitzy.
Quite glitzy.
The last person I bought from yesterday, I have a very sort of bohemian sort of look. That's like a French sort of boudoir sort of feel about it. And all their decorations were very similar to that. It's very dark, lace and bits and pieces hanging off.
What have you chosen with your customers in mind?
A range of products, really. Basically a mixture of ethnic-based products, which are like handmade, hand-stitched, embroidered sort of individual pieces. I'm finding a lot of my customers now are buying one-off bits and pieces and adding it to the tree every year as opposed to buying a massive theme.
I've noticed a lot of these baubles and items are made in the Far East.
You just try and avoid the ones that you think are too cheap, and especially handmade. If they're handmade and they're very, very cheap, then you realise somebody's got to be making them with small hands. So you just have to be a bit more clever about it. There are companies out there who sell Christmas handmade products from, Peru and in the Far East that are made ethically, and then people who make them actually make a reasonable living out of it. You've got to be careful.
Design manufacturers like Jonathan Berlin, who produce thousands of items per year, see the Far East as the only viable way of keeping pace with fashion.
It's an economy of scales, because if you're designing your own product, the amounts that you have to produce are much higher. If you tweak a product, and that's what we do very often, by using different materials, again, it's a higher cost, but it comes down. And then there are products readily available from a variety of different suppliers, which are more cost effective, notwithstanding the fact that they are very lovely products. In terms of where we buy, the majority of our purchases are from China. A lot is obviously to do with price, but also a lot is to do with machinery that's available and expertise. And I realise that Joe Public would probably think, well, all the Christmas decorations are made in a sweatshop and these poor guys are being paid 10p a day to work, etc., etc. I would probably say that 10 years ago you may well be right, but now things are a lot better. And we're very conscious as a company, and I am as a person, that we won't accept to that. We have our own factory in China ourselves, and they're certainly not the conditions that we have our people working under.
What happened to her leg? Broken.
This is a one-legged angel. Where did that come from? Is that?
I've got no idea. It looks kind of handmade.
I think that's yours, Hannah. I think that's from a Christmas card you must have made at school, but it's lost its leg. But it's nice.
Sometimes you can go into people's heads and think, oh gosh, that's definitely a 1996 bauble. I remember that sort of papier-mâché baubles and things. So while it's nice to have a few special ones, I think it's always nice to ring the changes and have new ones as well. I think it's a combination of all. You shouldn't keep all your old ones and have it so that it's almost like a predictable thing. People know what your tree's going to look like. I think Christmas is about the unexpected, and it's that wow sort of factor, I think.
Wickerwork stars. What's your position on wickerwork?
Oh, I think wickerwork's had its day. So I think, let's not have those wickerwork stars. I think that probably is it.
I've lost my wickerwork stars. I've put them in my wickerwork bin under my wickerwork desk. No, I lied about the desk. But I couldn't resist going back to meet Julie to see the culmination of all those design meetings and months of planning. the Winter Wonderland was finally open.
When I saw it and it all completed, I almost felt like crying. It looked just so perfect. It was almost like having a baby. You think, oh my goodness. It sounds dramatic, but come and have a look and you'll be surprised.
Wait. Oh no, my expectation's huge.
This is the tree we've done here, and we've got like a whole array of different things, and you can see it really works. We have that colour theme.
This is pink. You've got pink hearts I've never seen before.
They're almost like sugar. They always remind me a bit of Hansel and Gretel, like sugared sort of hearts.
Sugared hearts.
And then we've got these like almost like iced roses and beautiful pink chandeliers. And then we've got these lovely sort of like 50s femme fatales and...
Very boudoir. Very you could boudoir. Eat this tree, couldn't you? You could almost eat it. This is very saucy. This is saucy tree, isn't it?
Don't you think? It's quite saucy.
How many air miles have you done, Julie, to get this together?
I don't know. I'd say a few thousand, I suppose. A lot. And it's a lot of products to get in all at the same time. And when you actually see it, you can't believe that you've actually managed to do it. It's quite incredible. It's longer than a pregnancy. It's almost a year. So it's longer. It's a year's work almost.
The designers are right. Your tree does reflect your personality, but to me, they're also precious archives of family history. Memories carefully wrapped in tissue paper and put in a shoebox to be unfolded each year and remembered again at Christmas. Like the time my then 5-year-old daughter came running home from school with her first handmade Father Christmas. Yes, technically, it's a toilet roll covered in red crepe paper, cotton wool, and a wonky face, but I love it. How did she become a teenager so quickly? Then there's my mock Baroque golden apples, which remind me of my first grown-up Christmas tree once I'd left home and struck out with my first forays into tree dressing. And yes, my bird cages are bent, but I love them because they were my mother's. And as she's no longer with us, when I place them on the tree, somehow she's still around, if you know what I mean. I will ring the changes this year. Maybe I'll go crystal, maybe mauve, or maybe I'll spray paint some frosted flip-flops and hang those up instead. But I like Alison Cork's idea, which combines the contemporary with the traditional.
I have my own ye old whiskey box from about 40 years ago that's been in our family for that length of time, stuffed full of the now miscellaneous odds and sods, sort of teardrop baubles. You know, the set has broken, we've got one left of this and of that. And I love them to bits, and I actually work them into my tree every year, regardless of the major theme. They are a sort of sense of continuity for me, and whatever else is in fashion or not in fashion, they will always be there hidden on my tree. It's almost like a little signature. You know, some painter will always put a mouse somewhere in his painting. Well, you'll always find my grandmum's bauble somewhere hidden in the tree.
Darling, it's Crystals for Christmas was presented by Helen Lederer. The programme was produced by Sarah Taylor.